Hey there, HRN listeners. This is Harry Rosenbloom, host of Feast Your Ears. I know that news about COVID-19 and the coronavirus has made a lot of people nervous about getting sick. This collective unease has already had a big impact on our restaurant and food communities, especially in New York's Chinatowns. We hope that now more than ever, our listeners will join us in supporting restaurants and the hospitality industry at large. Many of the restaurants we love are small, independent businesses. That means that even one or two bad weeks can put them in jeopardy of cutting staff, limiting hours, or even having to close for good. As long as we're still able, we should go out to eat and support our favorite restaurants. I think it's also great to remember that hospitality professionals are really good at hygiene and food safety practices. Long before there were guides all over the news about how to properly wash your hands, they were already experts at hygiene. Guests' health is tantamount to successful hospitality in any restaurant. And even if you don't want to go out, you can still support restaurants by ordering delivery, buying gift cards, and giving them some extra love on social media. What better way to handle a crisis than by supporting those in our own community? If we don't support them now, they might not be there when this crisis is over. Join HRN in supporting restaurants during this time, especially our friends in Chinatowns around the country. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Learn about the wonderfully tart Montmorency cherry at choosecherries.com.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenbloom, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all the previous episodes of Feast Your Ears can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm thankful for listeners like you, and I'd love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. Today's theme, when disaster strikes. When disaster strikes, people still need to eat. The restaurant industry is full of people who love to help people eat and feed them. They are also often able to figure out how to make do or change their plans when ingredients aren't available or someone calls out sick or there's no electricity. For many chefs, cooking and feeding people is so baked into their lives that they need to do it, no matter what. Early on the morning of March 3rd, an EF3 tornado ripped through East Nashville, destroying homes and businesses and killing 24 people. I got on the phone with Brian Lee Weaver on March 12th to see how things were going with the recovery. He's the chef of two restaurants in the neighborhood, Butcher and Bee and Redheaded Stranger. Both sustained some damage, but were very lucky. They were able to open back up about a week later to help feed and help their community. On the heels of the tornado, we are now dealing with measures to stop the spread of COVID-19 across this country and across the world. It's going to have a huge effect on everything from schools to restaurants to public transit and our entire way of life. As we continue to respond to this swiftly evolving crisis, restaurants are still on the front lines as people need to eat. We don't need to go out and sit next to each other, although we like to, but we do need to eat every day. Well, can you start off by introducing yourself and tell me what you do?
Yeah. My name is Brian Lee Weaver. I am executive chef and partner at Butcher and Bee in Nashville and Redheaded Stranger. Butcher and Bee is a kind of Middle Eastern inspired small place restaurant, and Redhead Stranger is a sort of a breakfast taco Tex-Mex inspired taco shop.
Cool. So they're a little different.
Yeah, definitely. When I got hired at the Bee, I had very little experience with Middle Eastern or Israeli ingredients, and so I sort of had to learn that. And Redhead Stranger is a little bit more of a passion project for me.
Cool. Awesome. And then, so Butcher and Bee, we'll start there, has a location in Nashville, but also a location in Charleston, where I just was. Unfortunately, I did not go to the after party at Butcher and Bee. It looked like it was going to be a lot of fun, but after like 4 days of heavy eating and drinking, the idea of going to an after party started at 11, but it was daylight savings, so it was really midnight. I just couldn't pull it off.
I know. I was supposed to work that. I totally forgot it was daylight saving, so that made it even worse. We did the same thing a couple of years ago, and I don't think I slept at all.
Yeah.
We started in Charleston. I never lived in Charleston. I wasn't affiliated. I happened to meet Michael Shentav, who's my business partner. here. He owns the Bee in Charleston. I kind of met him serendipitously. Like, I had a server at the restaurant I was working at in Venice who knew him and said we should talk. And we did, and kind of one thing led to another. He ended up coming to LA and eating at my restaurant, and really liked what I was doing. And my wife was really unhappy in Los Angeles, and I was just like, hey, what do you think about Nashville? She's like, yeah, let's go for it. So, I mean, it happened in like a matter of a couple of weeks that we decided to move here. So wow. It's kind of crazy, but I love Nashville. I'm really happy we made that decision, you know?
And then how did it come about that you ended up partnering, you know, to basically create not exactly the same restaurant? I mean, the restaurants have the same name. Looking at the menus, there's a lot of similarities, but there are also differences. And obviously, you know, you're probably influencing the menu in Nashville because you're the chef there. You know, but it's not like a Waffle House, right? Where like you go to every Waffle House and the menu's the same.
Yeah, exactly. I think Michael definitely wanted to give me a chance to cook a little and sort of make my imprint on what we were doing here. And really, I mean, he started as a sandwich shop there, and he was looking to sort of kind of flip the scripts, so to speak, mm-hmm. and wanted us to really focus on dinner and just sort of make what I was doing shine. And I think, you know, we did that really well, and we become kind of a really nice spot to go to at night in Nashville. And we've almost made it it's just different at lunch. Like now it's like we're supposed to be a sandwich shop, but because we had that reputation, but it's just a little different now. So and because we did that, I think they tried to do that in Charleston too. But really, we wanted each place to have its own identity, and whoever was running the show kind of still got to do what they wanted to do, you know, within certain parameters of, you know, we want to support our local farms and sort of have an Israeli-inspired menu and kind of have some parameters, but not necessarily like cookie-cutter dishes at both places.
Sure. Right. So, you know, I imagine that the experience, right, is meant to be sort of the same. But the dishes mm-hmm. are a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think we definitely pride ourselves on our hospitality and have a welcoming, you know, place to come eat. And you sort of know what you're going to get when you come to both places. But just the food's going to be a little different. And we do have, some crossovers, like the whip feta at both places. I mean, that's kind of like our signature thing at this point. So we do try to sort of intertwine them a little bit, but we'd like them to feel like they can stand on their own too.
Do you send staff back and forth at all to like experience how each one is run, because they're the staff at A butcher and B in one city or the other?
Yeah, for sure. More management.
Sure.
Like I used to go back and forth all the time. Our GM in Nashville was just there. Our director of ops lives in Charleston. She comes back and forth. We try to sort of make sure that everybody knows what the vibe is at both places, you know. Like, I mean, they're different just in how they're lit, like how they feel, you sure. know. So it's good to see both places, and we try as much as we can to show both properties that, you know.
And then, so how did Redheaded Stranger come about? Because that's very different. I mean, that's, you know, you're going from like
yeah.
Israeli to tacos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you asked Michael, he never intended to open a taco shop. that was all me. I was born in Texas. We moved to Colorado when I was younger, and traveled to New Mexico all the time. Just the sort of Southwest vibe is what I always really liked. And then when I was in my 20s, I moved up to Portland, Oregon, and I couldn't get any of the food that I missed, you know.
Sure.
And I didn't even know that I missed it. Like, I was like, why can't I get a burrito, or why can't I get green chili here, or whatever it was.
Well, as you're describing this, I'm looking at the menu, and it's like, I feel like as you mentioned each place, like you said Texas, and my eyes hit Dr. Pepper hot sauce.
And yeah, yeah.
You said New Mexico, and I hit Red Hatch chilies. Mm-hmm. So sort of like tracing, you know, your menu through your, you know, where you lived.
Yeah, I mean, I was very intentional with what we're doing at Stranger. Like, I hope as we keep growing, we're going to, like, expand the menu and try to do more fun stuff. But, like, definitely there's some very specific things that I want to have on the menu and will never leave. And honestly, those are the things that, like, I couldn't get in Portland or whatever. And even when I moved to, after Portland, I moved to L.A. And L.A. is amazing. Like, there's so much food there. Like, so much amazing Mexican food and, like, you know, some of the best tacos that you'll ever have in your life, but it wasn't the same type of stuff that you would get in like the Southwest, in like New Mexico or whatever. Sure. So, you know, there was a place in LA called Home State that opened up. And when I went there, I was like, man, they like ripped off my brain, you know, like they were doing what I'm doing. But when I went there, they were sort of inspiring to me. That was sort of like starting to plant the seed of like maybe I can do this. And definitely when I moved to Nashville, nothing like that was here, and I was like, this is like a perfect this is a perfect place to try to do that. And nobody was doing breakfast tacos, nobody's making flour tortillas by hand here that I know of, other than like a couple of chain restaurants. So like And you can get, you know, you can get corn tortillas, all that stuff, but it's just a little different. And I think the vibe that we have, you know, it feels really great in the restaurant, and I'm really proud of what we've done there.
It looks great. I mean, I'm looking at your Instagram right now. It's Redheaded Stranger with no vowels in it. In Stranger. But I mean, yeah, it looks fantastic. I hope to visit someday. So let's talk about I guess, you know, there's kind of, you know, one of the pieces of like big intense things that's happened in the world, or at least in your world recently. So last week there was a huge tornado that went through East Nashville, and that's right where you guys have your restaurants, right?
Yeah, definitely. So both of my restaurants are in East Nashville. My home's in East Nashville. Like I've just like been adopted by that part of town, and like I love it here. You know, it's sort of it's on the other side of the river from like Broadway and all that. Like it's just sort of a lot of musicians live over here, and it definitely has kind of a vibe, and I really like it. But yeah, the tornadoes were really scary. I grew up in Texas, like tornadoes went through our neighborhood, but I've never been personally in the middle of one. And, you know, my wife works at Rolf and Daughters, which is another restaurant in town, over in Germantown. And her neighborhood, I mean, their neighborhood got hit too. And she was at work maybe, you know, a half hour before it happened. She got home and I was asleep, and she's like, I'm really scared. Like the weather's really bad. And, the sirens had started going off, the tornado sirens. And I was just like, they go off all the time. So I was like, whatever. I'm going to go to sleep.
I thought about the sirens because, you know, it was in the middle of the night. And so I wondered if people even, you know, heard them go off because they were asleep.
Yeah. I was more concerned, and she was more concerned by the alert we got on our phone, like our iPhone, which was, you know, maybe minutes before it happened. But really, like, the sirens go off all the time, so I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And I was like, let's go to sleep. We'll be fine. Like, the dog was freaking out, but I was like, we'll be fine. And then, maybe 20 minutes later, like, I didn't hear that much at my house, but my phone started blowing up, and somebody texted me a picture of the Basement East, which is a concert venue, like, right behind Butcher and Beat. And it was just destroyed. So I was like, oh man, I don't have a restaurant. So like I jumped in my car, I went down there, and it was like a bad movie, man. Like I tried to go around this cop who was like didn't want me to go around, and I was like, no, I'm just trying to check on my place. Like that ended up okay. She let me go. She's like, just go slow. So I had to park like a half mile away and walk down. Jeez. And there was just like power lines down everywhere. There were cars overturned in the middle of the street. There were trees in the road. Like it's nothing I could have ever seen. And then I got to the restaurant, and we literally had two broken windows, and that's it. It's like it jumped over us, or just took a weird turn and like entirely missed Butcher and Bee, but everyone around us was like decimated. So
yeah, I saw, I mean, I've been looking at pictures of other folks I know over there, like Cutelli or Nola.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they got lucky too. Their, you know, their roof got torn off their spot, but their building didn't get decimated, but like the building next door was flattened.
Yeah, I know. I'm friends with Cutelli, and you know, I like when I looked at it, I was like, oh man, it's bad, but it was just the roof. But, yeah. One of their employees lost their home and their catering truck and stuff, you know, but like literally right next door to them is High Garden Tea, which we use at the Bee, and like their building's completely gone.
Right.
Just across the street from the Bee is Smith & Lentz Brewery that we're friends with, and like they can't go in their building because it got so messed up, you know.
Oh, wow. I stopped in there for a beer like, you know, less than a year ago.
Yeah, they're awesome, and I mean, we've been friends with them since they opened, and I don't know, just to see that destruction is crazy, and just the fact that we had two broken windows is like, I mean, we're so lucky. But
so yeah, I mean, know, I saw that like you guys are open this week. I imagine there's not much else open in the neighborhood. How's that, you know, how's the neighborhood now that we're, you know, like 9 days later?
Yeah, I mean, just the how everybody came together and supported each other was pretty amazing. You know, like there were just people in the street helping, volunteering like immediately, which is cool. We, you know, I personally felt a little weird about trying to open right back up when so many people around us are hurting. But right. At the same time, it's like we want to at least provide a place for people to come feel like they're human beings again, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, we didn't have power until Monday afternoon, and you know, basically we bought a bunch of pizza and beer and told everybody to come help us clean, and we're able to get open the next night. And you know, like we're just doing what we can. We're pretty limited menu, but I think starting tomorrow, which is Friday, we'll more or less be back to normal hours and try to like feel like a real restaurant again, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, I think that's, I think it's important. I think it's important, like you say, for people to feel like there is some amount of like normalcy, so that, you know, both to have it be a thing where people can come back to the neighborhood who maybe were avoiding it, or people who live in the neighborhood or are cleaning up their own spaces. I mean, you know, since you guys were so lucky, I imagine that there are so many people who are just spending, you know, 18, 19, 20 hours a day just working to continue to clean up, to fix, to, you know, get their spaces back in order. But, you know, I imagine that means there's a lot of kitchens that are empty and a lot of people that are hungry.
For sure. And, you know, I've tried to kind of spread the word that like the best thing you could do is to come support us and support our staff, you know. Like they were out of work for a week, and, yep. You know, most people in our industry, you know, they work check to check, and, you know, we do what we can. We raise money for a few different things, and did a couple events at Red Headed Stranger just to try to support it. But at some point we just had to try to like help our family that works for us and keep going, you know.
So. For sure.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. A cherry isn't just a cherry. When it comes to tart cherries, the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry variety is the cherry with more. They're available year-round, dried, frozen, canned, juice, and concentrate. U.S. Montmorency tart cherries are also one of America's superfruit, which means they're good for you. Tart cherries contain many antioxidants and beneficial phytonutrients, including anthocyanins, the pigments that give tart cherries their bright red color. And don't forget about flavor. U.S. Montmorency's unique sour-sweet profile make them an excellent addition to yogurt, oatmeal, salads, trail mix, and of course, a classic cherry pie. Learn more about the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry at choosecherries.com.
And I saw you guys just posted on one of the Instagram accounts, you know, that you're not trying to poach staff from other places, but knowing that a lot of people in the industry are probably still out of work if other restaurants are still in the process of rebuilding, that you might have some space for people on your staff and you might need some people.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, I can help people find jobs. I mean, there's just like a line cook shortage in general, pretty much constantly in this town. So, you know, I'm sure there's jobs for them, but I know there's a lot of front of house people that have been displaced. And we're, you know, at Stranger, we're only open Friday, Saturday night. So we have that space in the evening that I've been trying to think of creative ways that we can get that open and maybe help people. So nothing has totally come together yet, but I think we have an opportunity maybe to work that out. You know, our friends right down the alley from us is Attaboy, which is a bar, and you know, they're really awesome people, and you know, they're only open at night, so maybe we can have like a guest bartender over there. Like, we have Attaboy pop up at Redhead Stranger or something like that.
Right.
I haven't totally figured out how to do it, but you know, I'm like open to any kind of talks about how we do that and try to help people. I mean, just the overall, like, just seeing how the hospitality, I mean, I feel like this affected the hospitality community in a special way, and seeing everybody come together has been pretty crazy, pretty awesome to see.
That's great. I mean, it's great to hear that the community is really is tight. Maybe if it didn't, you know, you didn't realize it before, but now you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I did realize it before. Like, I've specifically said, like, when I, like, the first few weeks I was here, we did a guest chef dinner, and one of the chefs, like, pulled me aside and gave me a list of, like, every farm he uses, and, like, there's never been any kind of, like, competition thing here. It's been just, like, people supporting each other and, like, trying to help each other out, and, you know, I don't know. It's only, like, reaffirmed that, you know?
That's great. It really is. So, of course, this is all coming, you know, now. I mean, it sort of was in the midst of what I think is another, for lack of a better way to put it, a crisis in the restaurant industry. And I don't know if you're feeling that as much because the tornado is so present, but certainly in New York and in Charleston, you know, at the Food and Wine Fest, a lot of the discussions I had with chefs was about what's going to happen with coronavirus and whether or not people are going to stop going out for dinner.
Yeah, it's like, it sucks that it's back to back, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, I literally just got off a phone call before I talked to you with my business partner and most of our staff in Charleston, and just trying to figure out best practices that we can do and kind of how we can confront this before it gets worse. You know, I don't really know. I mean, maybe like delivery options are the way to go. I really don't know, but yeah. Yeah, I think for the time being, like, just assuring everybody that we're a safe, you know, we everybody washes their hands, right, and we're sanitary and all that stuff. But I don't know, it's so uncertain right now. I mean, they just canceled all the colleges for the next few weeks in, yep, Nashville and all that, and you know, the NBA season, and then, I mean, it's just like starting to rack up, and it's so uncertain. And hopefully we at least built enough and a culture to like pull through it, but it's definitely crazy times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, you know, one of the things that kept coming up in discussion with chefs in Charleston was the idea that, you know, encouraging people, and you know, I certainly have been trying to if you aren't comfortable going out to eat in a restaurant, at least get takeout, mm-hmm, you know, order delivery, you know, because if you don't, in many cases, especially small restaurants, and it's already happening in New York, I mean, there are a number of, you know, it's a couple of very famous Chinese dim sum restaurants that have now closed, and it's,
yeah,
unclear whether that's just temporary or whether they're out of business forever. You know, and these are places,
yeah,
that on a Sunday morning would have an hour and a half wait for a table, and the last 3-4 weeks there have been empty seats.
Yeah, I know, it's scary to see. And like, I mean, we aren't on the coast, obviously, in Nashville, so I think it's like starting to trickle in a little more here. And I hope we weren't too slow to respond, but and it's tough too, just being two different restaurants. Like Redheaded Stranger is easy, like we can deliver whatever. Like we just wrap those tacos up and that's fine. But Butcher and Bee is a little different. Like we try to, you know, like it's a shared plate restaurant. Right. Like we don't even like we send out stacks of pita that people are supposed to like rip apart and pass to your friend. You know what I mean? Like we can't do that anymore. Right. So it's just like we have to look at things a little different, and we will. And yeah. I hope that, you know, we'll pull through it.
It's a very interesting point about how it changes the service aspect of the dining.
Yeah.
You know, something that I have tried to continue to point out to people is that, you know, before the news started covering how to properly wash your hands, it was pretty much chefs and doctors that knew how to wash their hands. So
yeah.
I feel like in fact that you're probably, you know, you're the safety in the restaurant is probably pretty good, as it turns out, and also about not coming to work sick. I mean, people in the hospitality industry, you know, it's not like going to work at your desk when you have a fever and diarrhea. People in the you know, in the restaurant industry know that, like, when you're sick, you can't go to work, pretty much.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we just had a staff meeting where, like, we one of the quiz questions was, how long do you wash your hands for? And, you know, every single person that works for us knows that answer.
Yep.
You know, it's definitely, I feel like it would be easy to point fingers at, like, oh, this is somewhere where we can, you know, like, not, this is something we can just stay home and not support. But the people who are doing it right, you know, that we know what we're doing and we're safe about it. And we're as, you know, as safe as we can. And I think hopefully people see that the best way to like come back is just to support us and not be afraid, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the things that, as freaked out as people might be in the near term, we have to think about the long term. And we have to think about, like, you know, if this goes on for a year or two, like, what do we want our world to look like in 2 years? And so, you know, I think there's hardly anybody who would say, oh, well, in 2 years, I don't want there to be any of these great restaurants that I love. So in order to make sure we can maintain that, and I, of course, you know, I mean, I want to be an optimist. We need to go out to eat. We need to support these places. And we need to be smart about it. Obviously, you know, like, I'm not advocating that people throw caution to the wind, and if you have a depressed immune system or if you're over 70, maybe you shouldn't go out, you know, but you could probably get delivery, and I don't think you're putting yourself in like great risk, but I don't think that you should go to like a sporting event and shake hands with everybody.
I mean, I think it's mostly just knowledge at this point, and educating people and just safe practices. And you know, I know that's like glossing over it, but you know, I think that at the bare minimum, that's where we start, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So let's return to the restaurants for a second. Why is Redheaded Stranger, I mean, why did you name a taco restaurant Redheaded Stranger?
Willie Nelson is one of my favorite musicians, and one of my favorite albums is called Redheaded Stranger.
Yep.
So that was sort of the start. And when I started to research the album a little more, he used to be a DJ in Fort Worth. And that's where I was born. And, so that was kind of cool. And he used to play a song called Redheaded Stranger, which was by another artist. But all those little details aside, I just like, I really love the name. I thought it was a cool name. And I didn't know if I could legally use it, just because I figured it was trademarked or whatever, you know, I don't know. So when we bought the real estate, I emailed his website just to be like, hey, I want to do this restaurant. I want to call it this. What's up with that? And I figured I would never get a response, you know, but like literally like an hour later, his granddaughter wrote me back and was like, I live in Nashville, or I've lived in Austin for a long time, and like I love the idea, and use the name, you know, you don't have to worry about it. And so I kind of got their blessing to use it. And, you know, I just think it's a really unique name and people remember it and they're excited to come there, you know.
Has Willie Nelson been in?
Man, I want him to. Like, I will, like, shut down the city once that day happens. But yeah, I haven't seen him in yet. But I'm really hoping he'll be able to. I know he's getting older, but sure. I know he's in town every now and then.
Right. So, that'll be awesome. I mean, maybe given the current fears, you can offer him delivery when he's in town.
At the very totally, least. Right. I'd drive it to Austin for him or whatever.
Yeah. awesome. So how did you get into food? You know, growing up, we talked about how you moved around a lot and how, you know, obviously some of those place influences show up in your menus. But, like, how did you get started in food as a profession?
Really, it was in high school. I got a job washing dishes, and it was at a kind of a mom and pop little Mexican restaurant in right outside of Boulder, Colorado, called Senior T's. And I got really good at washing dishes, so they asked me if I wanted to cook, and I said yeah. And I mean, that was the start of it. I worked there off and on for like 10 years. I mean, literally in high school, like, I would skip class to go to work. I don't think anybody knew that, but, you know, like, I just really liked being in the restaurant and making food. And, you know, you could, like, see out in the dining room and see that you were making people happy. There was something about that I really liked. But I never really took it all that seriously. I just kind of thought it was a job. I was, like, playing music, playing in bands at the time. And I kind of thought that's how I was going to make things work for a while. And turned out I wasn't that good at it. But ended up moving to Portland, Oregon to play music at the time. And that's when I kind of got into more fine dining and stuff. And just really liked that. I liked the regimentation. I liked kind of the discipline of it and learning about how to do things the right way. I had a really good chef there named Sarah Schaefer, and she just, like, kind of taught me how to be a line cook, really. And then that kind of led to me taking a job in LA, and then after that, that's when I met Michael. So that's how I got to Nashville, I guess.
Awesome. What are some of your favorite places when you have a chance to go out and eat in Nashville?
Oh, man. My wife and I find ourselves at City House all the time. Tandy Wilson's just, like, one of the best dudes I've ever met. And I just love the restaurant. And then the desserts there are just, like, so special. Rebecca just, like, always has a cake on the menu. And they're just, like, I will order it no matter what it is.
Nice.
They just make me so happy, like, every time we go. So that's probably my favorite place. And we end up at, right next to Red Ed Stranger is a place called Folk. I really like them a lot. They have, pizza and kind of like small plate vegetable dishes, and, you know, there's good people. It's really good. And where else?
I've been to Nashville twice, and I have to say that one of my best memories of Nashville was going to a bar called Springwater.
Uh-huh.
That's over by Centennial.
I don't know that
Park.
One.
It is, like, super divey and has music in the back. But I came through there in 2002. My brother is a musician, and he was on tour, and I was doing projection art to his music. And we showed up there really early. And, like, you know, met the day bartender, and she told us where to put our stuff and this and that and the other thing. And when we came back, like, 2 hours later, we found out that she had been fired during the time that we had, like, left to, like, go get a bite to eat and go to a record shop. And then by the end of my brother's set, she was back behind the bar. And I was like, all right, I get how this place kind of works. It's
yeah,
pretty fluid.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. When you came, did you ever go to a place called Arnold's?
I don't think so. I mean, that I was there that one night, and that was in 2002. And then I think I was in Nashville maybe once before that for like a night or two, or sometime around 2000.
Yeah. So, I mean, Arnold's is probably where I send anybody that comes to town, but it's this dude, Khalil Arnold. I think he's second generation or whatever. They've been there for like 60 years. His dad used to, his family used to run it, and now he took over. But it's a meat and three. They do like, you pick one meat and three sides.
Yep.
And they use like, they use all the same ingredients and farms that I do at my place. And it's just so delicious. It's just like super classic Southern cooking, and like the nicest people that you'll ever meet. Like, you know, I feel like when I visited here 4 years before I ever moved here, like, I feel like he knew me from that the next time I came in, you know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy how good you feel when you go in there.
That's great. Well, I have to come back now, cause I, you know, I got to come to Butcher and Bee and Redheaded Stranger, and obviously got to try Arnold's.
Yeah. You come to my spots and then Arnold's. I mean, I would like, it's one of the best restaurants in the country, like, for sure.
Nice. That's great. Awesome. So, I mean, obviously the tornado and coronavirus are both sort of a big deal. Did you have any new things on the horizon that are still moving forward that are paused because of this stuff happening, or you know, any projects that have come up because of them?
Well, definitely projects that have come up because of them. I mean, just trying to do some fundraisers and stuff here and there, however we can. I think that'll probably be in the forefront of our mind for a while. But at the same time, if nobody's coming out for coronavirus, who knows if that's a good idea. But I mean, you know, there's probably a disconnect from people who don't live in Nashville. You know, it's what happened here probably isn't in the forefront of their mind. So
sure,
we may just do like a special t-shirt or something that just keep at the restaurant and you know, donate proceeds from that or something like that. We have wanted to expand the Bee, Butcher and Bee, so that has been on our horizon, and we hopefully will be able to continue to do that. But we're looking at expanding a little bit there and putting in a private dining room. And I've always wanted to do like kind of a tasting menu restaurant, like 3-4 times a week, and that was hopefully going to be a part of that. So that maybe is on hold a little bit, but it's still hopefully on the horizon,
right?
Which would be pretty exciting. And then I would like to expand Redhead Stranger, but only I only want to do it if it makes sense. I don't necessarily want it to be some huge chain, but I do think a couple other locations could do well in other cities, you know.
Yep. For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that such a intense thing as the tornadoes is getting overshadowed. I mean, I think it's important, you know, like, just to bring up, I mean, 24 people died. It's not insignificant at all. And I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, that not just because we have this crazy, insane, sped up news cycle, but just because everybody's like rushing out to buy toilet paper because they're worried that the, you know, sky is going to fall. They forget that these things happened, like, and it, you know, wasn't, it was just, you know, 9 days ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's only been, 9 days. I mean, it feels like a month ago
at this point. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, people died. Our friends died, you know. I mean, the two people, one of the guys that died was a bartender, Attaboy. And, I mean, he's a friend of ours. And, you know, it's like, it's heartbreaking. So it's tough to just be like, yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
And I know that coronavirus is obviously on everybody's mind, but we're still kind of trying to figure everything out before that even, you know.
Yeah, before worrying about that. Next.
Yeah. And I mean we're thinking about both, but
of course,
but it's tough. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your, you know, obviously it's a busy time for you. I can't imagine you've gotten a lot of sleep in the past week. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk, and you know, I obviously wish you guys the best in Nashville, and hope to come visit soon.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Let me know anytime you're in town. Like, we'd love to have you, and happy to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. You can find more about Brian and Nashville at redheadedstrangertacos.com and butcherandbee.com. That's butcherandbee. And you can follow on Instagram at Brian Lee Weaver, at redheadedstranger, STRNGR, and at B&B Nashville. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please reach out if you have any questions. You can find me on email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. You can follow me on Instagram, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week, and wash your hands, and don't touch your face. Feast Your Ears is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.